Pastor Mai, hello and welcome to this episode of Agenda. I'm Ewan Gorn. Roadmaps, review dates and the opening of garden centres were all announced recently as government seeks to be more transparent about moving the Manx society towards a new normal. The coronavirus response shows an ability to tackle the climate crisis, claims a Douglas MHK. Manx Utilities has a new chairman and the Home Affairs Minister explains why the all-island warning sirens are on the way out. While last week gave cause for muted celebrations for the 75th anniversary of the end of World War II in Europe, much of the national news on the island was to do with the ongoing battle by the Manx government to get on top of the COVID-19 virus that has altered lives. But what happened during the last 7 days? What developments did we see? John Moss has this report.
Firstly, can I emphasise this is not going to be a list of statistics given in the week on the numbers in the various categories in this crisis. It's a summary of the week in lockdown with thoughts from the population. We've lived through another week in the Manx coronavirus crisis. Some have not, of course. The first Manx measures were brought in the Emergency Powers Act invoked on March 17th. Since then, there have been regular government press conferences. This regular pattern of conference, announcement, statement is now almost a routine, accompanied as it is by press questions, some to the point and of public interest, others perhaps missing that mark. But anything that involves COVID-19 illness and deaths can surely never be regarded as routine. The government, can I say, is proceeding at 40 miles an hour. That's winning plaudits from many directions, but there are still those who want to overtake the government and go quicker. Next week, the government will update its thinking on its approaches more later. So, a summary of developments in the last week. The headline, perhaps the cancellation of the motorcycle festival in the MGP, but then perhaps that it was still being considered in the circumstances, was more of an eyebrow raiser. The government produced its medium-term response at the weekend at what's happened so far, what we've done, in effect, a 25-page document flagged Stay Safe, including a timeline showing the significant events, starting from the World Health Organization announcement of a pandemic on March the 11th. It also noted that 5 days later, the Council of Ministers made a specific decision to move away from the Public Health England approach and take a more robust stance to reduce the Manx transmission rate. At Monday's presser, consultant microbiologist Dr. Rizwan Khan signalled a change of practice.
The first positive case in a nursing home was confirmed on 12th of April. We responded by testing all symptomatic residents and members of staff as part of the outbreak management plan. It has now been agreed to test all residents and staff as a part of overall response when one or more confirmed positive cases are reported at a residential home.
Other changes included a relaxation of visiting rules between people, with Chief Minister Howard Quayle saying he was looking forward to sitting in his deck chair and chatting at a safe social distance with his parents. This, said some of our listeners, needed clarity.
Are friends really included? How long can HQ sit in his deck chair? What about giving or taking drinks or food, sitting on garden furniture?
Timwell members virtually had our attention on Tuesday in their virtual session, with again the chance to talk over the government's response to the crisis. Bones of contention included Bill Shimmins wanting timelines, specific schedules inserted in the government's medium strategy paper. The position of Manx workers in the UK looking fondly homewards, and also the report of the Parliamentary Accounts Committee, who are questioning the government weekly on their handling of COVID-19, came up for discussion.
I suspect that many people will be disappointed that the plan lacks timescales. People want timescales. When will they get the medical operation they desperately need? When will they be able to open their closed business, which has been built up with hard work over many years? When will parents and grandparents see their children again? When will people get back to work? When will children go to school again? When will people be able to travel to see their sick relatives or attend to the affairs of deceased loved ones?
All the time, you, the public, have been giving us your thoughts on being in the Comus Hotel, for instance.
3 days, locked up 23 hours a day, taken to a plot of land so uneven a mountain goat would have problems taken round. Food is very low budget. First meal was served cold on a paper plate.
Other thoughts from listeners. As an Asperger, the social distancing does not make any sense to me. I can be physically 1 inch from another person and will be millions of miles socially distant from that same person, whereas a neurotypical can be 200 feet from a person while at the same time having social distance of just 1 inch distance from that very same person. And another comment from Barbara in Ramsey. On behalf of all small businesses, are we going to get any help with the rates that are due in a few weeks' time?
And an indignant cry from one of our online audience. Why did they have Dr. Khan on? I have absolutely no interest in cartridge-based testing.
On Wednesday, Treasury Minister Alfred Cannon was on the phone, on the man in line. Some are clearly not happy with not so much the direction, but the directions being given.
I'm a construction worker, self-employed. I get paid through a limited company. Am I employed or self-employed for the purpose of a government assistance?
Is the business support grant of £3,000 likely to be reissued for businesses again? Because obviously £3,000 doesn't go a long way for some businesses. And if so, would that be automatically credited to those that have applied for it and received it already?
Mr. Cannon has the far from enviable job of making sure the island has an economy to speak of when this virus has settled. Andy Wint asked him.
Quite a few questions came in on the text and email saying, how long will it take to refill the coffers when all this is finished?
I'm not sure, Andy, is the answer. What I will say is that we will deliver an interim budget statement in July. We may need to deliver an in-depth budget later this year. The primary focus will be to put in place an economic recovery plan.
The Parliamentary Accounts Committee met, as I've said. It will meet on a Friday for the foreseeable future. The future of tourism and hospitality is obviously a critical aspect of all this. Will it survive? To be blunt, that will mean support. Looking ahead, small aircraft can be flown from today to keep them airworthy, apparently. A lot of cars are suffering because they're simply not designed to be driven below 40 miles an hour. Could perhaps the police organise a chance for car drivers to open up their cars in an orderly fashion over the mountain for one specific short period? A thought? Just a thought? Tomorrow, more thoughts from the government on returning repatriates. Is that a word? Guidelines on pleasure craft, on nurseries. The talking point as the week ended was that disappearing TT bank holiday. It was left to David Ashford, the Health Minister, to make an explanation.
I sit on council and ministers as a minister. It was very, very clear when we first discussed it that with the cancellation was in order to come up with a date later on in order to celebrate our workers and our workforce and what everyone's done with the pandemic. That was clear from the first moment council and ministers discussed it. What we hadn't decided on was a date. There were plans that before we actually got to the Tynwald sitting, it would actually be announced that we were moving another one.
The government is operating on the principle softly, softly, catchy monkey or don't catchy virus. May I hope the same applies to you?
That report there from John Moss. An MHK believes the island's response to the coronavirus pandemic shows it can rise to the challenge of the climate crisis. Douglas North member Ralph Peake says lockdown has provided the perfect opportunity to take up new habits which are beneficial to the environment. He spoke to Local Democracy reporter Aaron Ibanez.
There will be some good that comes out of this time, and I think the realisation that we can move away from our old habits, you know, that we've just built up over the decades, and really look now at our beautiful island and how we can really change our lives for the better for ourselves as well as our neighbours and friends, and actually use that opportunity to get into a new habit, more active. It's better, healthier for yourself and better for the environment.
In terms of our carbon footprint then, as this sort of crisis has unfolded, where does it put us, do you think? Because obviously, yes, there's less travel, but there's more people working from home. Does that not mean more domestic energy use? So will there be much of a change in terms of emissions, do you think?
I've seen figures from cities to say, yes, there is an increase in, if you like, space heating for homes, slightly more electricity use for appliances. But that is nowhere near as much as the savings that have been made on the transport side of things. So overall, there will be a reduction. We haven't got any figures for the Isle of Man yet, but that should probably be reflected here as well.
So on a legislative point of view or on a political point of view, COVID-19 has not provided a setback to the government's climate agenda, but in actual fact, it's a benefactor to this current situation, do you think?
I do. I actually think it's handed us a good opportunity to actually believe and understand that we can change our habits for the better for ourselves and for the island. And we can align our decisions moving forward, we can align them to a positive outcome for the island and a greener, healthier, happier future for the island. And that's why we started with the air quality test, really, to really engage with the Department of Environment, Food and Agriculture to actually take their responsibility seriously and to start those tests on air quality, to really get focused on the idea of measuring and using data to make your decisions.
I mean, DEFA are not monitoring or have not been monitoring the air quality during this lockdown period. Would you argue that there was value perhaps in monitoring during this time? I mean, it would have been a pretty obvious result, wouldn't it?
It could have actually been useful if there was a test done when there was no vehicles travelling around, because then you'd actually see the difference. But I think what we've got now is an opportunity that people have seen how better the air quality is, less traffic on the road. They can actually see the difference in air quality and even taste it. We can see on a global side that the improvement in air quality has actually allowed people from 130 miles away from Mount Everest in India to actually see Mount Everest for the first time in generations. Now, that's a real tangible result when you actually think of all the air pollution is obstructing your view of the world's tallest mountain.
Air travel has obviously substantially reduced during this period, and I think Manx residents will have never have seen their own roads so quiet. For environmentalists, is this their glimpse into the future, do you think?
I think it is, and we can see from many cities around the world how they're actually tackling this now and how they see movement of people in the near future. What they're actually doing around the world, cities like Milan, Montreal, Vancouver, that they're actually turning a lot of their roads into cycle lanes. So people can actually walk on the footpaths, they can cycle on roads now that are really handed over to the cyclists. So people then aren't using public transport as much, so they're not using the buses, they're not using the trains, because with social distancing, you can't carry as many people on those vehicles.
Douglas North MHK Ralph Peake speaking there to Local Democracy reporter Aaron Ibanez. You're listening to Agenda on Manx Radio. It's expected Tim Baker, MHK, will be made the new chairman of Manx Utilities. Chief Minister Howard Quayle will ask Tinwald to approve the appointment at this month's routine sitting of Tinwald, which is taking place next week on Tuesday, the 19th of May. The post will be vacated by Dr. Alex Allinson, who was appointed as Education Minister following a mini reshuffle earlier this year. Mr. Baker told Dolan Mercer why he's excited for another new challenge.
There's obviously been a vacancy for Chair of Manx Utilities since Dr. Allinson was appointed Minister for Education. So there's been various conversations, I think, both prior to the COVID-19 outbreak and in the last week or two, because clearly there needs to be a new appointment there. And it was certainly a role that absolutely was of great interest to me. I think Manx Utilities, it's a high-profile role, some very illustrious recent previous chairs, and I think there's some really interesting challenges at the moment for Manx Utilities, and I'm very keen to step into the role.
It's obviously a big time for organisations like Manx Utilities. Even prior to the pandemic, and we had problems with fuel poverty on the island, and that was something that was quite well documented. Those will only have been amplified now, I would imagine.
Yes, absolutely, and that's a key issue. Plus, there's obviously the whole climate change agenda, which Manx Utilities needs to respond to, and on a more basic level, there's the sewage treatment applications in both Peel and Laxey, which again need to be progressed. So those are the very obvious challenges, and I'm sure there are an awful lot of other ones, also including the Laxey flooding issue, which there's the independent review report due to be publicised fairly soon, and I mean, clearly there's going to be many things of interest, I would expect, to Manx Utilities in that, albeit I've not seen it, so I can't comment on the detail.
This is effectively only quite a short, limited-term appointment, because in a year's time we're going to be looking at election time again for the House of Keys in sort of autumn 2021. How much can you realistically achieve in little over a year?
Well, I think it's, 16 months, Dolan, and I think that's a reasonable timescale to get stuck in. I think I've got a reasonable starting point, obviously having been in Keys for 3.5 years, been reasonably close to what's been going on in Manx Utilities, and there's also some key relationships with both DOI and DEFA, which I'm already part of, and continuing to remain in those departments. So I think it's a good length of time to have a real focus. There's enough time to get things done, but we do need to have some impetus behind it, and I'll be looking to hit the ground running and to make as much of my time in the role as as I can.
You've mentioned a bit about some of the overlap with your responsibilities in the departments of Environment, Food and Agriculture and in Infrastructure as well. You and I spoke when you took on responsibility for highways in the DOI, and I said at that time that you had an awful lot of hats to wear. To list a few, you're also chair of the planning committee, you're a children's champion, you're chairman of the Isle of Man Meets. This seems to be an ever-expanding portfolio now.
Well, I think I've probably got the outcome from wanting to add as much value and make as much of a contribution as I can. But just for clarity, the planning committee chair role is one which we're looking to bring somebody else in to take that from me. It would be too much.
There would be conflicts there, wouldn't there?
I suspect conflicts could be managed, but I think it's just that the planning committee chair is a big role, and the Manx Utility role is a big role, and it's time for me to pass on the planning committee role. I've done it for 3.5 years, which is a long time in planning committee terms, and I'm expecting council ministers to make another appointment to take that from me in the fairly near future.
A question I've asked you before, but I feel like it's apt to ask it again. With all of these responsibilities now under your wing, something's got to give, hasn't it? Is it constituents who lose time as a result of this?
My job is to make sure that I use my time to the absolute best effect, and I need to be very mindful of balancing every aspect of my role, and it's a constant challenge, one which I think you have to be prepared to do, and there is an adverse impact, probably mainly actually on personal and family time, but the challenge is to use your time well and to manage those challenges.
Aaron Michael, MHK, Tim Baker, and the Manx Utilities chairman-elect speaking to Dolan Mercer. Manx Utilities' new vice-chair is set to be Tynwald newbie Peter Greenhill, MLC, a post that is already vacant after Tim Crookall stepped down as another member of the Legislative Council with a view to running for the House of Keys next year instead. And finally on agenda, the decommissioning of warning sirens used to alert the Manx public in times of crisis will save the government up to £15,000 a year. Home Affairs Minister Graeme Crajean says this will balance the cost of moving to a new emergency messaging system, which is run by communications company Everbridge. Due to commercial sensitivity, though, the cost of this new system, where the public receive messages via telephone, text and email in the event of an emergency, hasn't been revealed. The Everbridge technology was used to contact 10 million people during Hurricane Sandy in 2012 and during the Boston Marathon bombings in April 2013. Mr. Crajean claims it will reach more people than the warning sirens and explain to me why they needed to be replaced.
I think what it is they're becoming more and more difficult to maintain. And, you know, when you've seen development across the Isle of Man, these warning sirens probably aren't in some of the areas where there's new housing. So we're going on to a new system called Everbridge, which is an app. So you can actually download the app and you can get emergency messages by SMS, mobile, voice, landline, even an email can get sent to you if there's any emergency notices that the government wants to send out.
Well, you have to sign up for that app, don't you, and give some of your personal information. I was just wondering, why is that a part of this?
Well, I think what you've got is that when you're signing up to the app, it's just to say that you're going to get the information. They will send you the data when it's sort of in your area. I think one of the areas that you've got is that when you've got the sirens, yes, you'll hear it. So, like for me in Ballasalla, I'll hear it from, it's on the back of the commissioner's building. But if you're out in a rural area, and you know, there may be a point where we can actually do it as a local area. So if there's, say, some localised flooding, so we may be able to sort of work it that way.
Yeah. But how effective is it going to be if, like you said, you require people to sign up? Not everyone is going to sign up, but everybody hears the sirens. So how is this going to be more effective than them?
I think, like I said to you, I don't think everybody does hear the sirens because...
Everyone going to be made to sign up, is it, I suppose, what I'm asking?
It's a voluntary thing, so we're not going to make everybody sign up. But it's one of those things that people can sign up to it. The sirens are there. It will be the last sounding on Friday. But, you know, there's rural areas around the Isle of Man where you wouldn't actually hear the sirens. Mm. And with a maintenance issue often... this was deemed to be sort of a more modern way of trying to get information out to the public.
No, I appreciate that. I'm just curious if you don't have the app, for instance, in a scenario when there is an emergency. I appreciate you saying the sirens don't reach some people as well. But what happens? How do you find out if you don't have the app and you are in, you know, need to know?
Well, you see, you know, some of this information will also go out to the radio stations, and you know, it'll go off to where. The radio stations who will then be able to broadcast it as well. Previously, it was a siren, but you didn't know what it was for, so you had to tune into the radio to find out what it was for. Mm. So this will actually give you what the information.
And do you worry at all about not having a backup for technology? Because we know technology can fail.
And it is a worry for that. You know, I think what we're going to be doing is bringing it in, and you know, we'll see how that works. I can't see there being any issues because what we've got is, you know, we've got a quite diverse network here, and it is via email and out to the radio station. So there's a lot of coverage from it.
Oh, I want to ask you about Everbridge, if I may. They sell these critical communication services. I just did a quick look on the internet to see when it had been used. It had been used in hurricanes in America. There was the Boston Marathon bombings. They actually got used in the city of Boston there through this technology. What's the cost of getting them to provide this kind of service?
Sorry, Ewan, I haven't got that price with me at the moment.
But is it, you know, is it expensive? Is it quite negligible? And how does it compare, I suppose, to the maintenance of the sirens, you say, as that was becoming a cost for government?
Well, you've got the maintenance of the sirens, plus you've got the replacement of them, plus you've also got areas, like I said before, where the sirens won't reach people. So the cost is balanced out across all of it, and it all depends how you're getting that message out there. Because you can send an email about what the incident is. So whereas otherwise you'd be just saying, well, the siren's gone off, and hoping that people are in a place where they can actually go in and tune into the radio.
Home Affairs Minister Graham Cajean. That's all from this programme. We'll be back with more from Agenda soon, and you can listen again to this episode online via the Manx Radio website or via Spotify. But for now, Gurumayu and goodbye.